Hello and welcome back to episode 65 of Talking Marketing, the podcast where we sit down with industry leaders and accomplished marketing professionals to explore the strategies, system, and creative thinking behind brands that stand out. Today we are talking to the Boston design scene. Design gets talked about a lot, the trends, the tools, the portfolios. What gets talked less is about the infrastructure behind it all, the people quietly building through the rooms where designers connect, grow, and find their footing in the city like Boston. My guest today is Catherine Hayden Carlucci, President of American Institute of Graphic Arts, Boston. She has been in those rooms for over 2 decades, first as a designer solving real problems for startups and small businesses on tight deadlines and tighter budgets. And now, as the president of AIGA Boston, the local chapter of nation's oldest and largest professional association for design, where she's helping shape what the city's creative community actually looks like from the inside. I have been looking forward to this conversation for quite some time now. We are going to get into the gaps nobody talks about publicly, the talent drain that quietly keeps happening, and what Boston's design scene needs to reckon with to become what it is capable of to begin. Let's get into it. Catherine, welcome to the show. Before we get into it all, how are you doing today?
So, Chenna, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I am doing pretty well today. I'm actually really excited that it's springtime here in Boston. Just coming off of a really interesting event that happened with MIT CCL Alliances, where I got to see just kind of the buzz and energy that's going on right now, especially in the VC and AI community. And then I'm looking forward to a bunch of events that are coming up that's also going to be focusing on AI, technology, the future, and a bunch of topics around ethics that I'm really interested in.
That's amazing. I'm just wondering, how do you keep pace with all these events that are happening around you and also maintain your professional life?
That is a fascinating question. I will say, and not to, overhype or overstate the obvious, but LLMs and AI tools are definitely helping me to like wrangle things together in a way that I couldn't before. But you know what? I've also always had this like healthy sense of curiosity and adventure, and I really have tried to focus my career around being able to structure it in a way where I can go out and pursue these in-person events. So something like this and this kind of pace is like something that's really interesting to me. So for me, this is like something that keeps me like going. And honestly, being able to see and talk to people in real time about what's actually going on is something else that just, despite all of the things, because I still have client deadlines and like things are going on and like professionally outputting. So on top of that, being able to go out and like see what's happening in real time is really energizing. So I think that's something that helps to reduce the stress and anxiety around the scheduling and planning and make it all feel worthwhile. But I will say that digital tools have definitely helped to improve my efficiency there.
From your energy right now, I can already see how great this conversation is going to be shaping up because I just want to clap for your energy right now because LLMs and AI, like you just stated, they are helping a lot to keep up with. But then there's also this caveat that you have to constantly learn also before you attempt and jump into it. And then you say you have deadlines with your clients, and then you are heading such a great and nation's largest and oldest community also. So you have quite a lot on your plate. And from all the experiences that you have had, I'm sure this conversation is going to be really enriching today.
Yeah, I'm excited.
So let's get into it. You have built a practice around solving hard problems fast for startups and small businesses, not the glamour projects, the real ones. What did that teach you about what design actually is versus what we are trained to think it is?
Okay, so first, just taking a little bit of a step back. When I first started doing design work professionally, I always knew that I wanted to do things that were more on the B2B side for governments, for nonprofits, like solving really tough problems was like something that I was always really interested in. And to get into the weeds a little bit, when I went back to school to get my master's degree in graphic design, my intention was to help come up with new ways of being able to search. So like this was like 20 years ago, and Google was available, but there was still this kind of difference between like, I know what I want to search for online. So like I want a size 10 pair of jeans versus like I want to browse around and just kind of explore and like see how, like what's available, like what the latest jeans cuts are and like fabrication, all that stuff. And I had like a tiny bit of a background in retail. And what I wanted to do was to try to see if like I could make an online experience that was more like an in-person experience where you can like browse. So it's not just like keyword metadata search, but also like kind of browse and see how things are connected, which is like kind of a weird problem. At the time, it was like a weird problem to come into design school with. Like most people that were going to design school at the time were focusing on type or poster design or something that was like less, I guess, focused on UI and technology. So I've always had this kind of like instinct around like I really wanted to focus on like these kind of like more cutting edge problems and things that were like a little bit weirder. And the thing that I usually say to people is I didn't get into design because I wanted to help people necessarily like design another t-shirt. I got into design because I wanted to like solve the problem of how do we improve our physical infrastructure? Like, what tools can we bring to the market that will make it easier for me to recycle, make it easier for a company to be responsible for their own recycling, right? Like, really being able to shift the nature of like how we work with products in like a foundational way. So that was something that was like a long-standing thing before I even started my career. And then I had the good fortune of being able to basically work with companies early on. My very first role, well, my very first design role was actually at Tufts as an undergrad. I worked with the International Relations Department, really was able to see how better design could make it easier for students to be able to register for courses. But then again, when I was in graduate school, I had the opportunity to work for the Massachusetts Department of Revenue with their training materials. So that was like another instance of like getting my hands into an end of the ocean that most people, there's like a lot of anxiety around tax reporting and tax filing, and like hopefully make it easier for people to do that. And then very quickly, I was hired by a startup, a local startup, that at the time was called Second Rotation, that was taking on the problem of electronics recycling and electronics resale markets. And that was very early on. Like that was before it basically became adopted by the major retailers. So from the very beginning, it's always been tough problems and tight budgets. Startups, I love startups, like being able to be together with a team and scale something with intensity is like unlike any other working experience. And it's the type of pace that I like as well. So I feel like, you know, my entire career has been around this like, how can I solve big problems, especially with like great people in like typically unusual circumstances? And I've just had the good fortune of being able to do that for, you know, the past 25 years and look forward to doing it for another 25 years.
Amen to that. I look forward to following your journey because 25 years and you have accomplished so much, and I cannot imagine other than 25 years and how much you'll accomplish. It's like the sky is the limit and more beyond that. And a quick question I want to ask in between is, how did you actually get into design? Like, was this something you pursued since childhood, or was this something you happened upon?
So, I honestly didn't even know that design was an occupation until I was in college. There were like very early signs, and I've been thinking about this a lot lately. Seventh and eighth grade, I had the opportunity to go to a magnet school that focused on media. So we were producing videos basically as like a core functionality in addition to like, you know, your standard curriculum. There was a media component where we'd go out, shoot film, come back, edit it together. And there was like a little bit of design that was in that. And the first like real design tool that I think I ever used was called HyperCard. There's a little bit of cult following around it now. And that was like playing with the tools, but I had no idea that designers existed. Like I didn't know it was an occupation. Flash forward a little bit, got to college. My freshman year, at the time, I thought I was going to become a nutritionist. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go to school. I'm going to study biology. It's going to be great. I'm going to become a nutritionist. Let's go. And of course, like I took bio, basically like bio 101, and it just whacked me in the face. And I was like, this is not, these things are not going to match up. Like, this is not going to work. But I've always had this like passion around the arts and art history and like in drawing and decided, you know, like a friend asked if I could help them out with a logo. And I was like, for like an on-campus organization, I was like, yeah, I'm happy to help. Did the logo. People really liked it. And another friend was like, hey, there's this job on campus with the International Relations Department. They're looking for a junior designer. Like, are you interested? And I was like, yeah, that sounds great. And then started doing design work then. Graduated from school in 2003. That was when the dot-com bubble burst and basically no one was hiring junior designers. Like that was not And like, I didn't realize at the time how kind of dire the economy was, but like as a freshly graduating person, like there's a lot of things you don't understand about the industry. So like I thought that some of it was a little bit normal, but now I'm starting to see that we were in an extreme situation. And went off, did some supply chain work for retailers, and then decided to go back to grad school, and officially became a professional designer, practicing like with frequency and now fully sustaining myself with design. But it was funny, like, yeah, if you asked like a 12-year-old me about graphic design, I would have been like, I don't know what you're talking about. And I wouldn't have had an idea as to what it was until like literally at least half a decade later. And it's funny because like I still talk to people, and I think some of my work related to AIGA Boston in particular, there's still a lot of misunderstanding about like what we do, right? As a designer, most people look at us and they're like, oh, you make red things blue. Like that's your job, and you make things pretty, and you can like work on my PowerPoint presentations, and like, yes, technically speaking, all these things are true, but designers can do a lot more than that. And I think almost all of the designers that I know, even the ones that have pursued a specific niche, they have a way of approaching their practice to get the best results out of you as a client. And when you find a designer that's like a great partner, it's just like finding like a great romantic partner. Like they will take you and your business to like a level that you could never imagine in the best of ways. But still, you know, there's a lot of stigma around what we do. Sadly, I think that there's still the like black turtleneck, like kind of like standoffish kind of personality that's attached to design. But in reality, like we serve in so many different ways. There's people, design practitioners that are focused on helping organizations be more efficient. There's designers that are focusing on how we can use AI and LLMs more efficiently. There are designers that are still designing posters and logos and like the kind of more traditional media. But I mean, that is a very long way of answering your question of like, I didn't know at the time. But I very quickly realized that like this is what I want to do. Like it's a part of my identity, and like I practice design all the time, all like 7 days a week. It almost never turns off. It's definitely a lifestyle for me, and I'm really excited that I have the privilege of being able to be a practitioner.
I see what you're talking about. Design is everything. I remember last year it was an Adobe event. They had guests who were featuring what designs they are doing right now. I was designing infrastructural units for blind people to navigate through in every day of their life. I found that so interesting. That is something that normally people do not think too much about. And for her to take that up as a project and to continue doing that, and then Adobe celebrating her and her project, it was amazing. After 20 years of client work, what has made you say yes to leading AIGA Boston? And what did you think about the job was going to be versus what it is actually?
So it's funny, right before I stepped into my role as president, I actually was the chair of the Norton Cultural Council. And for people who don't know what like local cultural councils are, so here in the state of Massachusetts, we have a network of local cultural councils. There's one every town, city, tribal area. So I think that there's over like 230 of them, and they're all controlled through the Massachusetts Cultural Council. Like that's the hub, and then every town has their own local one. It's basically funded by state taxes and the lottery in particular. So like when you go and you get like a scratch ticket or you buy a lottery ticket, like those funds and proceeds will go to help support things like your local cultural council. So if you haven't contacted them yet, like please. You should reach out, figure out who your local cultural council representative is, and because they'd love to talk to you. But I stepped in leadership there, and it was almost on a whim. In order for a local cultural council to move forward, you have to have a minimum of five people, and our cultural council had four members, and they were looking for a fifth. So I applied. I stepped in as a fifth. At being a fifth member, we were finally able to receive funding again, which is great because that's money in the pocket of people that are in the creative economy. And I think in my third meeting, they basically said like, "Hey, we need a chair," and I was like, "Okay." And they were like, "Well, do you want to do it?" And I was like, "Sure," but like I didn't know anything about the organization. I just like went for it and was like, "Okay, we'll figure it out." There were other people around that were really helpful in being able to get my feet wet and understand like what I needed to do. And basically, like, really kind of caught the bug for organizational leadership, especially for all volunteer organizations. So that was like my first kind of foray into it. And then during that, being that chair, I think it was probably like year four, I had done a little bit of leadership for AIGA Boston in more of a committee role. I was the co-chair of the Diversity and Inclusion Committee and then the chair of that committee. And yeah, once again, AIGA Boston needed somebody to step into leadership. There were some incredible leaders that took us through COVID. That was when I re-engaged with AIGA Boston. And yeah, based on my experience with the Norton Cultural Council, I was like, yeah, I'm happy to do it. And as I kind of referred to earlier on in my conversation, the thing that I'm really passionate about is to like tough, weird problems and like being able to gain organizational efficiency. Like as a designer, like that's kind of where my brain goes, and realize that like I could do a lot to help move the chapter forward into like an exciting future. Like being able to just kind of pivot with new tools and understand like how we can gain more efficiency with better tools. So that was my initial taking on to the presidency, and my term is up in 2 years. So like I'm at the end of my first. I have a term of 3 years. And what I'm hoping to do is to open up for future president candidates probably midway next year, have a full year of overlap with the incoming president, and then be able to hand it off. And what I'm really looking forward to is having multiple candidates to choose from, which was not the case when I stepped into the position. But if we can get enough like energy, and hopefully like I can make the position feel approachable enough that other people want to lead, we'll be able to successfully hand it off to somebody else. But like initially, it was the organization needed someone, and I thought that I had the right skills to help us make like a kind of a little bit of a pivot.
Would you like to shine a light on some of the key things that you have done over in your presidency?
Sure. So again, I'm rounding out at my first year. The things that I'm most excited about, really starting to scratch the surface of like getting everything that we know documented. And hopefully being able to onboard people a lot faster. So right now, as an organization, if we wanted to onboard someone, like it could probably take like 3 or 4 weeks of like emails back and forth and meetings. And like some of that's just like straight up, like there's a Google Doc over here and like somebody downloaded something locally over there and you got to email these four people to figure out how you get access to this thing. It's like, it's a lot to wrangle together. And I'm sure you've experienced,
Oh,
right?
yeah,
It's definitely a
definitely.
role. Yes. Anything we can do to help get that funnel tighter, it could be a simple Google Doc. Right now, we just spun up an instance of monday.com for project management because people on the team wanted it. So I think that those are the things that I'm most proud of, is being able to like pull some of the balloons down and pull some of them together to just give more structure, because my dream is to have us in a position where we can have people join our organization in a position of leadership for shorter periods of time. Because I just don't see a lot of people with the kind of ability to commit to something for years anymore. I think we can ask for somebody to lead branding, for example, for 3 months. But if we can get them onboarded under a week, really working hard for 3 months, and then they can, go and like do other amazing things, like that's my North Star right now. And I feel like we're getting very, very close to that. And there's not that many organizations right now that have that kind of operational efficiency. And I'm sure you've kind of seen the same thing also with the podcast that you're running. And it's
That
like
is true. Yeah.
at some point, like you'll have other, even more people helping to support it, or you'll need to hand it off. And it's like, how quickly can I offload this so that I can pivot to this other thing and not have it be like emails and conversations about this thing and like while you're trying to do a new thing, it's a lot. So,
That's the thing I dread the most. Handing off procedure is like weeks long and it just eats up so much time. It should be efficient. And then kudos on achieving and pulling down those balloons to make sure that the handing off procedure is simpler and even onboarding is simpler for everyone involved. I would also like to ask, because this conversation is going so well, what are some key goals that you have achieved, like one or two goals that you have achieved that were in your dream bucket list?
That's a really tough question. I would say right now I'm able to run my own business. That is a big deal. Okay. Like most people, I think. I mean, if you're interested in this sort of thing, like I think it comes more naturally to some people, but I think a lot of people are very afraid to do that. it takes a lot of work. There's a lot of anxiety involved. You don't necessarily know where your next paychecks are going to come from. There's a lot of having it to wear multiple hats. Like, it's just, there's a lot to do. But with it is very empowering. Like, I can go to an event at the high school where kids are showing off their projects and give them feedback at 10 o'clock on a Tuesday and not have to ask somebody for permission to do that because I own my schedule and I control my schedule. And that's like hugely important. So I can show up for community events. I can show up for family members. Like I can have that kind of ambition around what I want to do professionally and also like be present here in a way that I wouldn't be able to do when I've worked in-house for other companies and have helped other people build their dreams, right? So I think that that's probably like one of the like biggest dream goals that I never ever thought I would have is like running my own company and being able to like really set that path for myself. And I would say the other one is right now I feel like I'm like right at the precipice of being able to, and this is related to running a company, run a company where I can work with the most amazing people that I love working with every day. That is my dream goal right now, is like every project I work with is staffed with amazingly talented people. In 25 years, I've met some incredible people, and being able to do things professionally with them is like, it makes the worst days feel better when you know you are working with like really talented people, and being able to make that structure is like another dream goal of mine. I'm like right at the beginning of it. We've had some really great projects this year. And I'm looking forward to like getting some other things on the books where I can continue those collaborations.
Both of these are actual dream goals, and I one day hope
Yes.
I am able to do and achieve these dream goals. Working with the best people, having that environment where you feel motivated and others feel motivated and encouraged, that's
Yeah.
literally the dream.
Yeah, you should do it.
From where you sit as a president, you see the full ecosystem: students, emerging designers, veterans, employers. What's the gap nobody is talking about publicly, but everyone is feeling in private?
So one of the interesting things is that I talk to basically all of those groups. So I feel like each one has its own kind of thing that people don't necessarily like to talk about publicly. So I'll kind of go in order of entering into the market all the way through to like retiring the market. Obviously, right now, there's a lot of discussion around getting design education in K-12, right? Some of the things that we talked about before, you had mentioned in your example with the Adobe presenter. It's like clearly designers have, there's like a certain type of thinking, and yes, design thinking is the thing, and it's like been marketed and labeled and I think vilified in some ways, but yes, it is a thing. But being able to bring into K-12 like a certain approach to the world and understanding like these are problems to be solved and here are some methodologies to solve them. The challenge with K-12 design education right now is there's so much standardized testing that it doesn't like naturally fit, right? Like it's something that becomes this add-on. And I feel like as long as design is like this extra thing that like is like an after-school program, it's always gonna be like sidelined. And I'm sure you've seen a similar thing in marketing where it's like clients are like, for whatever reason, they never connect the dots on like this is an essential function. Like you cannot run a business without marketing. And if you're not going to budget it, and if you're not going to make time for it, like you are setting yourself up to be in a real tough position.
I have experienced that.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
So, like K-12 pushing these programs after school, like that is a problem. But I also recognize that, like, we need math, we need science, we need reading, we need literacy, we need kids to be in PE. Like there are so many stresses. I get why it's happening, but like I think it's putting our profession in like a little bit of a weird situation. Now you get people into undergrad programs in college. I taught at Suffolk for a while and did like a little bit of teaching at BU. And the thing I really struggle with right now is a student can be a great student but never get hired as a designer. That is a giant problem. I think in some ways that's like being able to wrangle our resources more efficiently. So understanding companies understanding like, hey, I have an internship, make sure you connect with your, especially your local colleges to help fill that pipeline. Like there is that kind of like gap of like business and higher ed. But then it's just like an old-fashioned problem of education. And like, what is education doing? Are we all in higher ed programs because we want to think more expansively, which is critical for, you know, evolving society? Or are we here to basically have, and I mean this with like the greatest respect, are we here to have a trade program? And like, design is a trade. I don't know how you feel about marketing and the end of marketing that you're involved in, but like, we very much are a practitioner of a thing that should have standards of quality and should be regulated. And right now we don't have any of that. So it's like, I think design programs have kind of fallen into this like kind of weird, we do a lot of like conceptual thinking. And then it's like, the reality is like, okay, you can get an A in a class, but like never get hired. And like, most people don't like talking about that. And we can dive into why that's the case. But like, that's a hole that I'm seeing there. All the people that are coming into the market right now, they're hitting a wall, like in a way that we have not seen in a long time. Sadly, I think that they're just kind of a victim of like the perfect storm of post-COVID. We had like a boom of money into the economy and a lot of investment. That money has fallen away. And then at the same time, we have a lot of overhype around what LLMs can deliver. And it's made this perfect storm that's just crushing entering designers. So we've got like that problem. People are talking about it because obviously people at that age need employment and they're just not finding it as quickly. But I think that what they're being oversold on is that AI is replacing them, when it's like, nah, it's what I think what's happening is mostly companies are choosing to invest in other areas or choosing to hold on to their stock. They're choosing not to layer in new design talent. And some of this is just goes back to like, they don't really know what we do. And until you understand what we do, it's kind of hard to like say like, yeah, we need to set budget aside for design and marketing, because these are crucial job functions. This isn't just like a thing that we can cleave off the moment that we like feel an emergency and like let it go until we want to spin it up when funds become available again. So like, entry-level people are coming into that. Juniors kind of feel the effects of that a little bit. But I think that what they're coming into is like, again, this like gap of most people don't know how to manage design teams. That doesn't get talked about a lot. It's a weird thing when you have like crossovers of a designer's reporting to a product person, a designer's reporting to a marketing person, a designer's reporting to an HR person. It, like, developing your career is very hard to do if that person doesn't really understand what you do. So like, the junior people get caught up in that. The mid people, I think, are just kind of like, you know, suffering the pains of just trying to navigate starting families, figuring out where they want to be in life. Like, I think a lot of that's well documented, but like, I've heard, and like, they're like anxiety around being laid off. But for the most part right now, I feel like if you can make it to like that, like 5 to 8 year period, you're inexpensive enough for people to want to keep you around. You're experienced enough to be able to be like a little autonomous. So like, for the most part, you're fine. And like, I don't think that people usually talk about that like publicly a lot. And then of course, for like people that have more experience, a lot of them, it's experience and tool sets that are less popular now. So think book designers. We still need book designers. We just don't need them the same volume. And it's like, they're not like young and cute. So like, you have like a bunch of us, and I said that them when I meant us, we're like not young and cute anymore. So it's like, we're trying to juggle a lot of things, like kind of being in a sandwich generation, pivoting your career, retooling what's going on with the market. You're hearing all these like different things, and like, your attention's just scattered. And then you have the people who are nearing retirement age or in retirement age. And I just don't think that we've done like a great job of keeping them engaged in our community. And it's part of what I want to do with AIGA Boston, especially next year, is figuring out how we can re-engage more experienced people and get a lot of their knowledge documented, because I think a lot of it's like kind of walking out the door right now. But I will say that like, the public outcry has been more around how do we get more college students and people that are like right out of that age, or right in that age range, like engaged with our types of communities. And I'm really actually curious to hear from your end. I think one of the challenges that we have right now as an organization is people just don't join organizations anymore. It's like, YouTube videos and podcasts and like free content and like getting people to sign up is like A lot of them are like, why? Like, what is the point? And like being able to understand that. Are you seeing something similar with
Oh,
AI?
yes, we are. A lot of the credit goes to our dear AI. I have a bone to pick with AI. That's the reason I say it like that. But yeah, a lot of free content is being distributed, and they for sure definitely do not feel the need to join any communities anymore. But then these are the same people turning around and saying, oh, we don't have community around. You need to join a community to have a community. You cannot just stand in the rain and be like, oh, I don't have an umbrella. You need to buy an umbrella to have an umbrella.
Very true. I love that. That is a metaphor.
So, and I also really liked how you slyly input economic lesson for us, the cash flow of 2020, and now the
Yes.
advent of AI has like literally crushed our generation. We have no idea what to do with ourselves.
Yeah.
And
Totally.
no better time to join a community as this time, because this is where you meet like-minded people having those problems, coming up with solutions which can spread to all of us and can benefit us.
Absolutely.
So if only more people could hear about it, I think we should bring back our institutions. I was gonna say church, but not as in church sense, but as in where people would get together.
Yes.
And usually people got together in churches and they would talk about their issues, because currently the main thing we need to talk about is our issues and realize we are all in the same boat and we are the ones who are going to solve it. Nobody's coming to save us, literally no one. So
Yes.
we do have to be a part of the village, and li heavy lifting of a community needs to be also done by us. We can reap the benefits, but we also have to sacrifice our time to be a part of that so that we can come up with a solution.
Yes, agreed. 100%.
AIGA Boston has real infrastructure, fellows, a fair internship pledge, student chapters. Which of those actually move the needle for working designers, and which are the ones that the community are still figuring out how to use?
There's something that I would include in that list that I think really helps to move the needle and kind of goes to that community question or challenge that you were just describing. And that's our mentorship program. Amy Parker does an amazing job with it. And there's like also many other people that are involved. Becky Fong, Hannah was involved. There have been like a lot of hands that have helped to move that program along. And basically our mentorship program, it's pairing a emerging designer with a practicing designer. And basically for a few months, they're able to, have basically like a mentorship relationship where one person comes in with some questions. Usually it's around like developing their portfolio or getting into a new market. And then, they either choose to continue to communicate or they don't communicate anymore, but like at least being able to have like set the table to have that relationship, I think is probably one of the most impactful things that we've done. I think it's interesting when you have a combination of, emerging practitioners who are also in some cases like learning how to like be a professional worker. And navigate like how do I even ask a good question that's like relevant to me and like understand like the basics of like okay like what's next and then also on the flip side the mentor being able to understand like oh yeah that's right like when you're fresh out of school you might not even know how your Google Calendar works and like someone needs to explain it to you and like that happens a lot where it's like really basic like professional functions like people just don't know in some cases so the mentorship program has been able to enforce those kind of like more like baseline professional skills and then also bridge the gaps between again like what people are learning either independently or in school with a practitioner that's like okay let's talk about like what this looks like when you're working with a team or when you're working with a client and the client's paying you so I would say that that's probably the one kind of piece of infrastructure that has really move the needle the most, in my opinion. I would also say that portfolio reviews, so we do portfolio reviews typically once a year. Again, it's a similar thing to the mentorship model, but it's more like talking specifically about portfolios. What I will say, though, as an aside, and I might be like thrown off of Designer Island for this, portfolios like are our like stock and trade. Like that is like the thing that is like, oh my God, I have to have a great looking portfolio. If it's not great looking, then like who am I in the world? The more I talk to people who are not designers, the more they are completely baffled by this. They're like, we don't even know totally what this is. Like you're just showing us this work and like we don't know what it means. And it totally makes sense. Like if you're talking to somebody who is a communications manager and like most of their job is around like architecting newsletters or events or like other things, like they don't necessarily know like when they're looking at a portfolio like what good is. They just kind of know like what they like and what they don't like, which is important. Like that's really relevant. But like as designers, it's like so much a part of like this is who we are. Like this is us on paper. So like portfolio reviews are a great tool for us to be able to like sit down and give people feedback on it. But I also just want to remind all of us as a community that we do still have heavy lifting to do as far as being able to explain and like make sure that people understand like what they are looking at when they're evaluating these portfolios, because a lot of times people don't know and they don't get like why there's value in it.
When you talk about these programs that educate and help people, is there any one specific program that that you have seen has reaped the most benefit to these students or people who join AIJ?
I may be a little bit biased, but there's a taxes. It's not formally a series, but Hannah Cole of Sunlight Tax has spoken with our organization multiple times since I've been here. And I always find her presentations really enlightening. And usually it's around, how as creatives, how we can prepare for tax season. And like really trying to like lower the temperature around being prepared is really helpful. So to me, that's like one that's really stood out because it crosses that barrier of talking about like typography, for example, and like talking about a different skill set that like some designers or creatives might not possess. What I also really love about that is that it's open to like it's open to anybody who wants to join, but like it's really talking to any type of creative, right? It's not just designers, it's marketing people, it's copywriters, it's photographers, it's videographers, it's like it could be developers and engineers. Like there are lots of different types of people who need that kind of accessibility and support when it comes to something that can be like very anxiety inducing. Speaker series is really popular. Speaker series typically is once a year in the spring with ICA Boston. This year we'll have Rick Griffiths joining us, and that's amazing because not only are the speakers really interesting, and like sometimes it's a studio, sometimes it's an individual. Usually it's somebody who has like national presence, who has a book or some other like large scale venture going on. But it's not only like seeing from them what kind of work they're doing, but also just the room is like filled with people that are interested in design of like all types, and it's like. Have you ever been in a room before where like it gets warmer and it gets like hot because there's like so many people that are in it? That's
I've
like,
been to Indian weddings.
yeah. So there you go. It's kind of like that. It's a little bit different, but it is. It's like you're.
is
It's
excited nonetheless.
yes, and it's like warm because like there are people there, and there is just something that's really fascinating. I feel like a lot of what we do sometimes can feel very like lonely and isolated. And like being able to be in an environment where like so many people come together to kind of celebrate and talk about design is like, magical.
Talking about our home base, Boston. Boston produces extraordinary design talent every year. But there's a pattern where talent leaves for New York or for West Coast. Is Boston retaining its designer? And if not, why?
Well, a couple of things. I wish I had like the hard numbers to back this up, but I feel like when I first came to Boston, the attrition for people in the 20 to 30 category was like very high. So people came here for school and then they almost immediately left. And a lot of that I think is due to, or back then was due to like cultural factors, that it's like if you don't have friends and family here, why would you stay? Like, everybody else is leaving, so I'll leave too. Like they kind of just, people went their own way. Then a few years ago, I actually saw something that was like, Boston is like the hottest market for people that are in that age range. And I do not know what caused this to happen, but there was something, and maybe it was post-COVID, maybe it was like you got to know your neighborhood in a certain way, and like you don't want to leave it because not like because literally you've been in it in a very unique way for so long. But Boston at like some point like really caught fire as far as being able to retain like people who are early career. And it's, I think recently kind of like tipped again to like people leaving and some not leaving. The housing market's really expensive. Like ultimately, you know, as designers, as marketers, as creative people, like we're people, like we need to live in houses. We need health insurance. Like things need to be affordable. If it's going to be super affordable, or excuse me, if it's going to be not affordable, you're asking for people to leave to begin with. And then you layer in on just like these kind of cultural factors of to what you were saying, like New York and like the kind of paragon of, you know, design excellence that it is. And then also, frankly, like emerging markets, I think we're losing a lot of people now to the Southeast, the Midwest. There are more studios that are emerging there that are really powerful and it's just more affordable. The weather's nice. Like I feel like in New England, we always like turn our nose up to the fact that like people like to live in places that are nice, where it's like the sun comes out and it's like not cold all the time. But like,
yeah,
that's like a thing.
We are very picky with our weather. We want it cold and depressed.
Yes. It's just like a weird.
We do not want sun anymore. We
no.
will survive on the clouds.
Exactly. And then get upset when people are like, I've had enough. It's time to go. It's like, yeah, that makes sense. Every time I go out to the West Coast, I always say to people, and I'm sure they look at me like, lady, what is wrong with you? I always look at them and I'm like, you do not have any idea as to how good you have it. Like you literally walk outside and it is like sunny and like nice. Most of the time that is not the case here in New England. Like there's like rain. Today is cloudy. Yesterday the sky was like beautiful. I mean, it's just kind of been all over the place, but when it comes especially to like design talent and retaining design here, and not to sound too optimistic about it or too Pollyanna-ish about it, but like, I think the hard work that we have to do is around building that community and making sure that people are like making friends and feel like they have a support system here. And I will give a big shout out to Carly and Lee, two of our amazing AIGA, both board members and community leaders who have put together an initiative called the 5 to 9 Club, which is starting to kind of scratch at that kind of community building in real space. And the 5 to 9 Club is basically for like freelance, at the time it was like for freelancers and kind of independent creative people just to come together in like more of a casual way with a little structure around it. And that initiative has gone really well this year. I'm hoping that we'll bring it back again next year, but I think that it's hard to leave a place when you feel like you have friends there. And like, that's, it's something that simple. And like, even the bad weather, like people will hang in there if like you feel like you're connected to community and that you're actually part of something meaningful. I think when it becomes easier to get distracted by shiny objects of other markets when it's like, I don't really have any connections here anyway. So like, what's the point in staying?
You raise a great point because I am a LA transplant here and I love the sun. I, back in India also, I was in the North India, which was sunny all the time. Our winters were really short and so was the case in LA. And being here in Boston since like 2023, the only thing that is keeping me stick to Boston is the community that I have here. Yeah. I did not have this great community back in LA. Yes, it is sunny over there. Yes, they have beautiful beaches. Yes, everything else that is shiny and golden and I want all of that. But community is what really my heart desires. Yeah. And Boston is the perfect place. And I hope our emerging designers also find their community here in AIGA. They can find their support system over here and they can find mentorship. There are so many great programs that you have already talked about. And I hope a lot more people listen to this and join AIGA and AMA for their support system and building their own back that they have.
Yep.
On that note, I see that there is an AIGA event coming up, which is called AI and Empathy Community Conversation Series. As the leader of a professional association whose entire purpose is to protect an advanced design community, how is AIGA Boston preparing its members for that shift? And are creatives in the city scared, excited, or just confused?
So I think going back to other parts of the conversation, it really is about like community and education. Like those feel like those are the two biggest pillars for us. If we can give people a sense of like other people are here with me and that are approachable. And if we can give people like access to information, those are the two things that are going to push us along like that. I mean, we'll always have more members or parts of our, or people in our community, as long as we honor those two things. I'm really happy to say that the first community conversation in the series was fantastic. I think we sold out of tickets. Like, it was an online event. It was a virtual event, but it had very much like a workshop feel to it. So again, it was less of like, I feel like YouTube videos and articles that come up in like Google are like scaring us. Like, how LLMs are going to destroy your industry and like designers are cooked or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, there's a nonstop stream of like that when it comes to AI. And like, this conversation was very much around like a very different approach and actually proactively like understanding and navigating how the tools can change your perception of like what they can do in your career. So like that first conversation like went very, very well. And I would say, as far as like the general temperature of people in this community when it comes to these tools, is all over the place. Like, the event where we met, at the dinner, I was sitting at a table where there's one group of people that are like tired of hearing about AI already. And I don't blame them. Like, they're like, enough. Like, it is a world killer. It is a job killer. It is nothing but pain and misery. And like, it is stolen from people in order to be where it is today. I don't want to have anything to do with it. I'm tired of people talking about it. I don't want to do it.
I should have been at that table.
Yes. Like, I mean, in all fairness, it's a pretty common like refrain right now. So like, most of the tables probably drift in that direction. But like, I heard that definitely in the room. Then I have the group of people that are like all in. Like, this is a part of our business model right now. Today, we are training people and we are hiring or getting clients based off of our ability to use these tools and sell as a product AI in your design work stream, AI in your creative work stream. We are embracing the future, running with it, monetizing it, love it, don't want it to go away. If it went away, it would cause problems. Like, 100% fully adopted. And then there's a whole bunch of people that are in the middle that are everything from, sometimes they use ChatGPT, sometimes they don't. Some days they wake up and they're like, oh, this is great. And then some days they wake up and they're like, I can't take another Firefly prompt or like whatever tool they're working with, like something going upside down. So I mean, we are all over the map. I would love to have a survey of specifically how like creatives feel about it, so we can get like a few numbers behind what we're seeing. Maybe we'll be able to do a survey like that this fall. I think AIGA National is potentially gathering some of that data right now too. So stay tuned for that. I know that they're doing some things around careers, but AI, I'm sure, is going to come up with that. But I know, as just an individual, anecdotally, people are everywhere. And it's unsurprising. Like, I talked to a bunch of different types of people, and like people that are in-house and agencies and independents and like everything in between. And so I just hear a lot. But I would say most of the concern is enough already. Just like it needs, like the temperature needs to come down in the conversation. But then there's also, you know, a healthy amount of people that are out there, workshops. There was a part of GenUX last year. For the first time, they led with a workshop in the morning. The workshop was focused on using Lovable. So being able to like vibe code apps, and like people really enjoy their time there. So like, you know, clearly there's like a lot of people that also just want to learn more about the tools with a little bit of structure.
That's great that people are using all these tools to learn and advance in their careers, because that's also giving them a leg up. I think the popularity of AI is primarily based on that people are now leveling up to a scale where they did not think that they had a chance at. So now they want to fully utilize it, maximize it, and optimize in ways monetarily And then also, I think mentally, they are loving the challenge of being, in that space where they can create more and more and see how many customers they can attract. That's actually a great wave to be on. And for designers as well, I feel because as you've early on stated, design is a trade. You hone it over the years, and then when something like AI comes along and it does the job in like a few seconds, it maximum may take 2, 3 minutes to do what you have been building overnight. You have been taking 5 years, 2 years to build that. That definitely, sets back in our mental space, and it gives us that doubt. Oh, will my skills be, not evolve as much as I thought because other people have this, and then it also creates the myth that people do not need designers. That's where the problem arises because, of course, you can use AI to design and have components of UX, UI into it, and then have all these beautiful things. But then you also need someone to guide AI, and that is literally the job of a designer. They are there for their oversight, they are there for making sure that it does not fall apart the moment 1,000 people starts using it. What happens to these apps when, 10,000 people, 1 million people are simultaneously using it? If it is falling apart on that stage, that's where the designers would be like, yeah, we told you so. You should have hired us.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. Please listen to Chetna. Chetna is correct. I've been having this conversation again this past Monday, the around guidance. I wish that people wouldn't look at these LLMs as like a solutions machine. Like, it is not there to just push out final product that you just walk away from. What it's really good at, though, is like pushing you as an individual and like helping you through the process of thinking about a problem, challenging your assumptions. You should challenge it. Like, you should not just take complete what's coming out of these systems. You should be taking it and evolving it. And I think, and again, this is like a slight tangent. I said something that was
We
very
love
similar.
tangents.
One of the things about COVID I was really struck by when we were doing all the social distancing was like, to me, a lot of people were really excited to not have to go to work. And in the US in particular, like, we have grind culture here. Scott Galloway has said it before, like, America is a great place to make money, Europe is a great way to spend it, because in the United States, like we hustle at work. Like, that's what we do, that's what we're known for. I think we have like a reputation, and I'm not saying that as like a, an ideal state. I'm just saying like we have a reputation of like work, 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 without a lot of attention to
Rihanna
work.
made a song on it.
Yes.
That's how much we love work.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. So like COVID comes along and basically people's work schedules drastically changed. You didn't have to spend time in a commute anymore. You got like a little bit of time back to be able to eat lunch. You know what I mean? Like, there was just like things, and that is of course for people that could socially distance. Like, all respects to the people who still had to show up at work every day and physically be in space, because like I think we ignore them a lot. For those of us that were able to stay distanced, I think some of us just kind of like not being as intense anymore. Flash forward now with these tools, I think more a lot of people are like willing to like let go of the reins, because like frankly they're like overworked, and like we just have like a culture of like grinding people. Not enough compensation, not enough respect for like people, like their physicality, and like encouraging, like truly encouraging people to take care of themselves. And then a tool comes along and is like an answer machine. And it's like, boop, I can just pop out an answer. Okay, great. Like, I'll do that and then go over here because like I don't want to be at this thing anymore. You know what I mean? So
Hello.
like it's just that perfect storm of like, as a society, and I do not know who has this conversation, how we have it, but like as society, like we really have to think about the nature of work and how we respect workers more, because right now it feels like we don't. And I know there's like bigger economic factors that are at play. There's been this slow stagnation, if not decline, in basically our average wages, and that's been happening since like I was born. So like we're talking like decades and decades of like a decline in how much we're getting paid, and
Especially
like
for
that kind of,
women. Men have not faced it as much as women have. And nobody seems to be talking about that or even bo be bothered about it. So there's that.
Yes. So like age-old problems, and now a new technology comes along and is like, oh, we can solve that for you. And then, of course, you layer into that like a bunch of very big companies that are like, we will gladly take your money. Like, so there's just this perfect storm of all these things coming together that's like, yep, this is what we're left with. But at least, like, again, going back to the initial question, like here in Boston, like the general temperature is like all over the place. So if you ever feel anywhere on the map during the day, like I guarantee there's at least 30% of the population is right there with you.
I'm glad that we are talking about this because this is an issue by and large, and I hope more people after this conversation start talking about with themselves and just thinking about it. They don't necessarily have to have a conversation. Understand why this is happening, because once we start thinking and understanding why this is happening, a lot of the solutions would start coming onto the surface. It can be fixed. It is not something that we have to live with.
Yeah, absolutely.
When talking about the Boston design community, if you could change one structural thing about it, what would it be? Or like, is it something, an event or a program or something fundamental? Who would be actually in the power to do it?
So I, for a moment, I'm going to pick on our organizations. Like, I think that we just need to do a lot more cross-programming. Right now, I feel like the communities, the creative communities, are too siloed. So there's like the designer people, there's the marketing people, there's the photographers, there's the fine artists, there's the copywriters, and we all kind of like live in our little bubbles. And like every once in a while, we'll like peek over the fence and see what's happening. But like we should be doing a lot more to get our communities together because there is so much overlap. And I will say, as an aside, that our current community at AAJ Boston is incredible. Like, really friendly people. If you come to an event and you just kind of like start like talking with people, like people will talk with you. Like, don't feel like you, if you come out, you're going to be kind of in isolation and that's really standoffish. I'm really proud of the fact that we're so open and welcoming and like the people are so positive and like amazing to be around. That's everyone from people attending events to like leadership and everyone in between. So if anyone listening to this is like, I just want to hang out with people and like talk about, I mean, sometimes we talk about design things, a lot of times we don't. I would really encourage you to come out to an event because it is like a really great group of people.
In short, you're saying the vibe is golden retriever.
Yes.
So
That's exactly what I'm saying. Thank you.
if anyone who is interested in having conversation with golden retriever, like-minded people, this is the
Yes.
place to be, AIGA Boston.
Absolutely. Yes.
This was a lovely conversation with you today, Catherine. I have enjoyed every single bit of this conversation, and I'm so happy this conversation went as flawlessly and smoothly as it went, because it means less work for me. I do not have to edit even a single thing out of this, and I am greatly enjoying that right now, because
I hear
everything
you.
that you said, it's just what's the baseball context in this? You were hitting home run on every single answer,
Oh my
so
gosh, that's
I'm
great.
so
That's very
happy.
kind. Thank you.
I'm so happy to be having you here to help me understand how AIGA Boston has been and how it has been changing under your presidency and what things viewers to look forward to. Also, I would like to do a small shout out to your business. So tell us about it. What's your business
Yes.
about? What's its name? Where is it
Yes.
located?
Okay, that thank you. I appreciate that. So yeah, Field Trip Central is a design studio that's based here in the Boston area. We specialize in supporting especially government, nonprofit, and higher ed in all kinds of design work, and that's branding, print, and digital. We are also layering in immersive design work, so think like lived experiences and event work. So if you're putting together a special event, something for fundraiser, something for community building, then by all means, please reach out. And I mentioned this earlier. Yeah, what makes us really special is that I get to work with some incredible creative people that are based in the area. And I'm also always looking to connect with people and understand, like, you know, chat now, us being able to chat more about what you do in marketing, anybody who has any kind of service where you're like, hey, I just want to be able to talk more about what I love to do. I'd love to connect with you to understand how we could possibly work together in the future.
That's amazing. That's amazing. So once again, the name is?
Field Trip Central.
Yes, Field Trip Central. That's the place where you're looking for immersive design, for any of your design problems, and to have solutions for them, creative solutions. That's
Yes.
the perfect environment that you're looking for your next business venture.
Yes.
Catherine, again, once again, thank you so much for having this conversation with me, because I have enjoyed every single second of this conversation. I have understood so much more about design community, how crucial design is in our day-to-day life, and what we would be without design in our lives. So thank you so much for all the work that you have done for the community, and thank you so much for having this conversation with me today.
Yeah, thank you. No, Chetna, this was amazing. I really appreciated all the questions were so thoughtful and thought-provoking. And yeah, if there's anything else that you need from my end, I am more than happy to help.
Thank you.